Hey guys, today we're going to talk to Mark Pettis. Mark Pettis is one of my best friends, and he's also the president of Highlands College. Highlands College is a college that Church of the Highlands started in 2011. Church of the Highlands is one of the most respected churches on planet Earth. We're going to talk to Mark about his family, growing up in small town Alabama, his football career, his wonderful wife Jill, his boys, and his relationship with Chris Hodges. You're not going to want to miss this. This was an awesome conversation. Thank you for joining us on the Entrepreneur Dad podcast, where we talk to entrepreneurs, high-level executives, and overall just people that are working their butt off to make a great living for themselves. In this, what we do is we examine their journey, their ups, their downs, their transitions, and also how to remain great spouses and loving parents while managing a full daily schedule. Thank you so much, and I hope you get tons of value out of your time with us. Hey, so tell me about growing up. Tell me about you, where you came from, kind of what life was like from birth to, you know, you moved to college.
Yeah, I grew up in East Alabama, Clay County, an incredible place.
Kind of one, not very many.
Yeah, kind of one of those places where time stands still, which I consider a privilege of growing up there. Graduated high school with like 40 people. Love my parents. My parents are both educators, so grew up in a home that was really focused on learning. They both taught in a local public school there in Lineville, Alabama. Wow. And so got a older sister and then a younger brother and sister. Very close family. One of the things that was great growing up is we were in this small town and with lots of deep relationships and
sure.
Lots of great people and opportunities. But then also we traveled a lot with my parents being teachers.
That's right. Yeah. I totally forgot about this.
Yeah.
So for those of y'all that don't know, Mark and I went to college together. And so this is going to be really, really easy from a conversational standpoint. So talk about the crazy trips you and your folks used to take and how
yes.
borderline crazy your dad was about these trips.
Yeah, well, you know, my parents grew up in the 60s, so they were infused with that that season of time and the,
right.
the adventure road trip kind
yep.
of thing. So being teachers, they you know had the entire summer off, so and we had the summer off obviously, so we had a little RV, not much bigger than a van,
mm-hmm.
and the six of us would load up every summer. Literally drove to, you know, 45 different states growing up.
45 states.
Went to Alaska three
okay.
times.
Okay, so that's my favorite.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. So tell us about, so you're in Lineville, Alabama, halfway between Birmingham and Atlanta.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are going to Google this when they see this. So, but you drove.
In a vehicle.
In a vehicle with five human beings.
Other people. To Alaska, which is about a week of driving. And of course, there's only one major road that goes to Alaska, the Alaskan Highway, and it's, you know, it's just a pretty rough drive. So, and once you're up there in the you know, the Yukon, you can go almost an entire day without even seeing civilization.
Wow.
And so, honestly, incredible memories. You know, as a family, it was something that brought us very close to each other. And then just you had lots of stories coming back to school in the fall.
So what would you do? So let's just talk about the trip. So what would you literally leave from Alabama? And it would take you how long to get to Alaska? And how did you get there?
At least a week. Yeah. I mean,
so you would drive for a week?
At least a week, yeah.
And what kind of car did you take?
I mean, depending on how many KOAs you stopped in along the way.
Absolutely.
Some people will know what that is. So, yeah. So, you drive 5, 6, 7 hours a day. You stop. And so even along the way that you're seeing stuff, you know, we would go to different battlefields. My dad's a big history guy. Loves studying history. And yeah, so you just see America, meet a lot of people, and those are amazing memories. And for us as kids, you know, we didn't know it was that different than a lot of other people's vacation, which was great. They would go to Panama City, we'd go to Alaska. I thought it was the same thing.
That's what I did. I went to the beach
yeah.
every summer. So growing up, I was majorly entrenched in sports. Dad was a football coach. That's what we did.
Yeah.
We went to the beach for a summer for a week, and then we come back and it was football from the time I was 5 until the time I was, 33. So
yeah.
Talk to me about the things that you did growing up in that small town.
Yeah, I think one of the things interesting about a small town, and I've read some things even recently on this, is there's not a lot to do.
Right.
So there's the, you know, the negative part of it. It's like, hey, we just really don't have a lot to do. But the positive part of that, which I think long term has been a benefit in my life, is the creativity that comes
from
it.
For sure. Yeah. I mean,
you got to figure out what to do. And so, I mean, we were always, you know, basically me and my friends, you know, even growing up, it was always like, what do you want to do? And they're like, I don't know what you want to do.
Yeah.
We just would find a way to do something crazy, jump off a rope, swing into a lake, or, you know, go hiking out in the woods, ended up, you know, up hunting, fishing, doing all those kind of things. And so, you know, sports is still a big part of our culture, and I think a little different maybe than what I've experienced here in Birmingham, where it's year round. You know, there it was pretty seasonal, and there were you know, big chunks of time where it was just, you know, hanging out, figuring it out. My grandfather owned a farm, so a lot of hard work there, which was really good for me, you know, growing up.
One of the things I see with people that are from smaller towns, though, it's like I was from a small town, but like some of the things my parents let me do, I'm sitting there going, there's no way I would let my three kids do it.
Yeah.
Like some of the things that your folks let you do, like I would go hop on a four-wheeler and be gone for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. By the way, no cell phones.
Yeah, no cell phones. Well, it didn't matter anyway. There's no service.
So I think being from a small town, my town's not obviously not as small as yours, but the area of the community I was in was small. I think being from a small town helps you grow up in a way of gives you a little bit more independence.
Yeah. Of course, it was a different time then, you know, and I think
sure.
I think the world has changed some. But no, I definitely think, you know, independence, once you survive four or five near-death experiences as a kid, you grow, you know, you learn a little wisdom a little earlier possibly.
Absolutely.
But it was definitely like that. Same for us, you know, we were just kind of released to go and do
right.
And to check in by dark. That was
absolutely.
That's the rule, right?
It is dark. So time change
based on the summer. You got to be home by dark.
Talk to me about some of the people. So everybody's got that two, three, four, five people in their life that majorly influenced them. So yeah. You've got mentors and things in your 30s, just had a birthday. So just don't talk about those people. Let's talk about that from birth to probably 18 years old. Who are the people that were like,
yeah.
that shaped you? Because yes. I know who mine are, but who are the people that shaped you?
Yeah, that's, I mean, very easy for me to kind of go through a list. First and foremost, my dad, and still is to this day, and I'm going to spend time with him today. I mean, he's my hero. What I love about my dad is that he's a guy that has never seen, I've never seen him have a bad day. Just his optimism is massive. And he's a learner. I already mentioned, you know, love studying history, but honestly, he can do pretty much anything. In fact, today we're working on my house, and things I still don't know how to do at 38 years old, and he's, you know, he's like a pro at it. So I think just that relationship, you know, great conversation with him, always challenged me to learn, and then hard work. I mean, I played football, as you know, and Friday night football game, Saturday morning, we were working, you know.
Talk about football in your town now, like straight big-time football.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was life or death. I know you experienced that.
Right, for sure.
That kind of small-town rivalry, kind of what you would see on like on a smaller scale, but same intensity as Friday Night Lights. Where I was from a small town, we had this other small town, Ashland, that was a few miles away. And so just uniquely, there was this incredible rivalry, which drove the team. One of those, just like any business, right. You know, competition drives competition. Yeah. So everyone was driven to be good, so on both of those teams. So we ended up having a lot of success. They had a little more success at times, but it was a whole lot of fun. Yeah, so football was, as they say in Friday Night Lights, it was a way of life, you know, for
it
us.
It really was, so. Because it was a situation where, like, you see it on TV and you're like, that really doesn't happen. Like,
oh, no,
the place
for us,
is shut
so,
down.
So all year long it was big, but yeah, in that one rivalry game, last game of the year called the Clay Bowl, it was Lionel, my team, versus Ashland. I mean, the governor would fly in, you know,
right.
Helicopter in.
Because he was from?
He was from Ashland, right. So yeah, we prayed for him. But anyway, so yeah, so that was huge, and my dad supported that. But then we also had a lot of life outside of that, which I thought was really important. Our life wasn't just about sports; it was right. about a lot of things. So he's definitely, I would say, first and foremost, my hero. I mean, you know, my second one was my youth pastor, Bill.
Absolutely,
and
he's one of mine.
Interesting,
which is crazy.
Yeah, small world was your youth pastor, and so I know for both of us, you know, Bill called out leadership in us, and I think. He was the first person that, you know, looked at me and said, you're a leader and God's got a call in your life. And right. So that was huge. And not just saying this, bro, you would be on that list as well. So through Bill meeting you, moving to college, for me, it was a big moment going small town to Birmingham.
Man, yeah, I remember those
You remember
days.
Me?
I remember
the look on my face.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, literally the first night, you know, we lived together, of course, our first year. So the first night we're in the dorm room, I'm, you know, first night ever spending a night in Birmingham. I hear sirens going on.
So let me stop for a second.
Of course, 5 a.m. the next morning, you're waking me up. Like, it's a great day to be a Blazer. I'm like, bro, let me sleep.
So let me put this in
context. But you did start cooking for me.
I did.
Which that got me up. And now that's worked out well for you.
So let's give this thing some context. So you come from a town where water's all around, woods, all this stuff, to we literally live
in the middle of
the shadow of the Vulcan statue.
Yeah,
like you could look up from our door and see Vulcan.
Yeah. It was
in the middle of downtown Birmingham.
It was a little different than where I grew up, but it was fun because I mean, we already had a friendship relationship, right. and there was a great crew there. But I don't think I would have made it, you know, without your friendship there, and then also, you know, through you meeting my future wife,
right,
and then also Pastor Chris, my job. So yep. I feel like I helped you with your cooking career. And you
absolutely
helped me.
There's no doubt.
Yeah, ministry career.
So, let's go through college. So you had an opportunity to go to walk on at Auburn. So you were a long snapper, which is it's kind of an afterthought in some people's minds.
Like, okay. Oh, he's a long snapper. We're okay with that.
Yeah, totally okay with that. But
we're humble. We're the picture of humility on a football team.
Totally.
We don't need any of the praise. We just want to serve our team.
That's so Sunday school.
Make sure we just do our job, get off. If someone knows our name, that's not a good thing.
Not a good thing.
Yeah.
So, had a chance. Huge Auburn fan growing up.
Yeah, my entire family went to Auburn.
So, huge Auburn fan growing up. Had a chance to go to Auburn as a walk-on, but then Coach Sullivan, Pat Sullivan, who's a legend.
Which honestly, if you said, what's your five, he'd be another one, you know, in that group. Of just had of course, known of Coach Sullivan, and as a Heisman Trophy winner and an Auburn fan, you're just, you know, he's a hero, and followed his career, you know, at Auburn. And interestingly, he came to my high school one day recruiting someone else, and ended up asking to meet me in a meeting as well, just while he was there. And we met, and you know, him having at that point shifted over to UAB,
right?
It was an incredible conversation, and of course you were there, so it kind of led to my official visit, which you hosted, which was a lot of fun. And I think the combination of, you know, really his leadership, your friendship, and then honestly just, you know, I really felt the peace from God that you're supposed to be in Birmingham. Yeah, so, but yeah, definitely a shift from what I expected to do, which was to walk on at Auburn and to kind of follow in the footsteps of my entire family. But God knew what he was doing, getting to Birmingham.
Oh, man.
It was a lot of fun.
For sure. So I knew what I was going to do growing up. Dad was a football coach. I knew.
Yeah.
Like, I went to college.
Yeah, we all knew.
I was a 17 ACT guy. So I was there to play football and to go to college and to go coach. So I knew what I was going to do. Kind of the anomaly. 18, 19 years old, going to UAB, going to go play football. What did you want to do at that stage? What was your end game? What did you want to do at that stage?
Yeah,
do you remember?
Yeah, it's a funny question. I hadn't thought about it in a while. Actually, my first degree was was thinking sports medicine.
So right.
I was kind of heading in a pre-med direction. Of course, UAB works for that.
For sure.
And I was in my freshman biology class, which you remember was like 1,000 people.
1,000 people.
And probably wasn't a great presentation for the program because it felt very impersonal. And I was just sitting there one day and I was like, I don't know what it is yet, but it's not this. And I went my second semester and went undeclared major, which I lived out till they literally called me one day and said, you have to declare.
Got to pick, yeah.
But in that space, and honestly, even before that, I, you know, for me specifically, ministry had, I'd felt that calling, but there's no one in my family who had ever been a pastor or in full-time ministry, vocational ministry. So I didn't have a lot of context for that. So kind of feeling my way through it, but the whole while, what I did know from day one, even in the sports medicine thing, was something that involved people. I was never going to be a desk job guy.
I mean, for sure.
You know, praise God for that. But I had to be with people. And I really felt like it would involve, you know, not necessarily coaching, but possibly teaching, but something in the same spirit of helping people reach their goals, helping people grow towards, you know, their purpose, or in this case, you know, now in ministry, just love that moment where someone connects with God and has that relationship.
I mean, it's good. So, Jill, let's talk about Jill.
Yeah.
Jill's your amazing
She's
wife.
She's the best.
Just go through how y'all met and kind of that journey with you and her, because you guys are an amazing couple, raising amazing kids. So just kind of walk us through her and how that happened.
Well, you were there. I mean, you were there.
I was there, yeah.
So, you know, Jill played soccer at UAB, and she's from Texas, and I, you know, maybe some people watching are from Texas, and they would be the first to say, you know, everything's bigger in Texas, and including attitude. So the first thing I noticed about Jill was just that she was like this fierce soccer player. You know, there were some soccer girls out there wearing bows in their hair. You know, Jill was out there, she was just
Killing people.
Yeah, basically.
She got brothers.
Yeah. So she was out there just, you know, and I was like, man, this girl, she was very easy to notice because she was fierce. That's probably the best word to say on the soccer field. So, yeah, just, you know, developed that friendship. All of us, we had such a great friend group at FCA there, and developed that friendship. And then, and I think, honestly, you know, anyone who might be looking for a spouse, attraction is always part of it. Absolutely. And there's other things that need to connect and all of that. But I think at the core of it, friendship, which is what you have with your wife, Jackie. And Jill and I were friends before we ever dated.
Yeah.
So when we started dating, it was, and still to this day, you know, that's the core of it. It's a friendship.
For sure.
That's built on that. And we have a lot of fun together. I think that's the main thing is, you know, I knew that I could laugh with her. She was up for big adventure. Yeah. And you know, she, thank God, did not have a passion to move back to Texas because I was not going to Texas. But other than that, it was a great fit from day one. So.
Good. So get married, let's kind of try to stay with the family theme. And kids, you got four amazing boys, okay? So one of the things that we all as parents are always wrestling with and always dealing with mentally, spiritually, is raising our kids.
Yeah.
It's something that we always are thinking about. I'm always having a conversation with Jackie about ours. I imagine you and Jill are always discussing, you know, the four boys. What is one of the things, the main thing, as raising your boys that you want them to take with them? Let's take out the obvious. We want them to know and have a deep relationship with God.
Yeah.
That's the obvious.
Yeah.
Let's talk the practical. What's the one thing that you want your kids to take with them as they leave you one day?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to narrow down to one thing. And I don't know how much, I know you'd agree with this too. I'm still in the journey. So the thing I do most in this season of life is I really am always looking for great models and, you know, other parents who've raised great kids. And so personally, you know, that's what I'm constantly doing. I feel overwhelmed, you know. There is no manual on raising kids, and so we got a long way to go. So right or wrong, but I think for Jill and I, we have four, and so when you have a lot of kids, it's easy for it to be a clump versus the individual. So we're really always, and especially in this season when they're kind of between 7 and our oldest is almost 11, and just really looking at them individually and helping them discover and begin to discover, because they want at their age, but begin to discover things that they're passionate about, or that they have a natural bent towards, their personality, and celebrating those things. I think the one thing I would want them to leave with, I think what's, you know, I started out with as we talked today, is just that an authentic, close relationship with their parents, especially with me as their dad. That I don't have to always be their best friend. I don't think it works out that way, but I do know that that they know that I am for them, and that they have a deep trust, and that even when Jill and I miss it, and we try to be quick to apologize, even on our end, you know, we a lot of times ask our kids to say they're sorry. We want to be the first ones to apologize as well when we're out of line. But through all of that, just that they would develop a deep trust. And I think if parents have that trust level, you know, as a youth pastor, I've seen this over and over. Teenagers can be hard, and there's going to be moments. But if beneath all of the disagreements or any of the tension, there's a trust, which leads to great communication and forgiveness for each other and just relationship, then I think that we've won in those first 18 years. Because just like me, I didn't leave my parents' house knowing what I was made to do, but I had a deep relationship with my God. I had someone, or with my dad and with God, and had someone there to walk through life with. And that gave me so much confidence, you know. Yeah. I wasn't out searching for a lot of things that I feel a lot of people are searching for.
Right. Something you said in there that I don't think a lot of parents do, and we do it with our kids. We hate doing it with our kids. Apologizing to your kids.
Oh, it's huge, yeah.
Okay, so if you can think of one, I want you to think of one. Give me an example of when, and I'll give one too, but give me an example of when you've apologized to your kids.
Oh,
like you've got, like, Landon's 11, you know, no.
Almost 11.
Almost 11. And
I did it yesterday.
So talk about
that. So, as you, we were talking about earlier, my wife's out of town this week, and so I'm like, you know, in dad mode 10,000.
I called you the other day. So, I'm like, hey, you want to meet for breakfast? No. Jill's out of town. I got all the boys. I got to go.
Yeah. That's it. So, you know, we're having one of those days that the night before was a late night. And so we're having one of those days where it's rushed in the morning to school. And I pushed too hard. I'm not a yeller, so I didn't yell, but my tone was definitely, just intense tone. And, you know, we get in the car and we're riding to school, and that's just not how I want them. I don't want them walking out of that hectic environment. And so, man, we're on the way to school, and I'm like, guys, I blew it this morning. You know, I apologize, please. And I think the key to apologizing is not just saying, I blew it, but resolving it. That's one of the things we really focus on as a family is, you know, there's always going to be those bad moments.
Yeah.
I like having a resolution moment, and then we all reset and we go. And so I think in those moments, you know, it's like, hey, guys, if you would forgive me, and they're like, we forgive you, Dad, and then, and then it's like, it's over.
Yes. I think that's huge, because that's what one of the things we teach our kids, but we also do it with our kids, is, hey, it's not like, you need to ask them, hey, will you forgive me?
Yeah.
And you need to get a response for them, just like when they do something wrong, like when Jonna hits Tegan, it's like, Tegan, will you forgive me? It's open-ended so that they have to answer.
Yeah, versus I'm sorry.
Or instead of please forgive me.
It's a statement.
Very much so. So I think that's huge. And and we do that too. It's very, very hard sometimes, but we do it.
That's all we have for this episode of the Entrepreneur Dad Podcast with Thomas Cox. Tune in next week for part two of our interview with Mark Pettis, where he talks about his first experience at Church of the Highlands, his relationship with Chris Hodges, and his views on leadership in general. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you tune in next week.